The next case is 04783, Portage County Board of Commissioners versus City of Akron. Mr. Jacobs.
May it please the court. With your permission, Mr. Chief Justice, we would like to refer to some copies of materials that were exhibits in this case, because quite frankly, the confusion in the case from the outset has always originated in a rush to get to the legal principles without properly understanding either the geography or the history. And it sometimes is difficult to follow, I think, in the record exactly what people thought they were doing when they were deciding some of the legal principles. The first exhibit that we have here was a satellite photograph of the overall geographic area where the Cuyahoga River runs. And for those of you who do not happen to be from the vicinity, let me just see if I can help you trace it real quickly. And there is a copy of this in the appendix to the brief. But we start, the Cuyahoga River, the headwaters are up in Geauga County in this area. And the river actually flows south, takes a turn at Akron, and then flows north to Cleveland. The objective of the litigation here is the status of Lake Rockwell, which was the first reservoir built by Akron on the Cuyahoga River, just above Kent. And Kent is found just here at the confluence of Breakneck Creek, which flows in from Ravenna and the Cuyahoga. You will see that later on, when we go through some of the timing, that in subsequent years, Akron added two other reservoirs even farther north, East Branch Reservoir and Ladue Reservoir, and the water from each of these is transferred through the Cuyahoga River down into Lake Rockwell, and Akron's water plant is actually located at Lake Rockwell. That's where the water is removed and then piped through the system for distribution to all of the customers. The scheme that I'm going to describe to you that was decided upon in 1911 was that this dam would essentially eliminate the upper headwaters of the Cuyahoga from the flow that would continuously go through the middle section of the Cuyahoga. The middle section essentially begins right here at Breakneck Creek, continues down past Kent, Monroe Falls, Silver Lake, Cuyahoga Falls, goes past Akron, turns, and then we are into the lower section of the Cuyahoga. We reach a point up here at 12 where Akron's water is returned to the river from a wastewater treatment plant. We then flow on up and we find a point, actually that was 11, I'm sorry. At 12, we find the first place where the Cuyahoga River and the Ohio Canal, which was coming in basically in this direction and then paralleling the river, the first connection between the Cuyahoga and the Ohio Canal is here. And later on, we will talk about the Shalersville well field, where Portage County removes water, and they return that water up here into the Cuyahoga. Now, what we have on the other board is a sequence of the events. And the sequence of the events has been, I think, badly misunderstood by some of the parties and by some of the judges in the lower courts. On the right side of this list, we have the various record references as to establish the relevant dates. But essentially what we had was, at the beginning, a private water company for the city of Akron that was Right up here, you can see the Akron Waterworks Company, which had been in operation for a number of years. The Akron Waterworks Company took its water from what was known as Summit Lake being at the summit of the canal as it flowed toward Lake Erie, and was used as a reservoir to provide water to operate the locks on the Ohio Canal. What I put up here now is an exhibit from the trial. It also happens to be a copy from the papers of Governor Harmon that are found at the Ohio Historical Society. This is a copy of a map that was actually distributed to all the members of the General Assembly and to the governor at the time Akron was lobbying for the legislation that is before you today. And it was explaining to all of those lawmakers what it was that was under consideration. I'm going to take this exhibit away, and for purposes of illustration, I have highlighted some of the key things that appeared back at that spring of 1911. First of all, you can see in the solid black here, we've outlined the limits for the city of Akron as it existed at that time, and you can see in the yellow where we have taken the Cuyahoga River that was on the prior satellite image, and we have marked it on this map. The Cuyahoga River did not flow through Akron at that time. It was completely separate. Down below, south of the city of Akron, was the Tuscarawas River that began in this vicinity of northern Stark County, came up around, and then headed south, roughly parallel to that section of the Ohio Canal. And as you can see, the Tuscarawas River also did not flow through the city of Akron at that time. The third river that was under consideration as a water supply was what's called the Little Cuyahoga, and it's a very short river, and it began at Congress Lake and flowed through a corner of the city of Akron until it joined the Cuyahoga just below the city of Akron. If you've ever been there, there's a big viaduct between what's now downtown and North Hill that goes over that Little Cuyahoga just near where it joins the Cuyahoga River. Akron sat on top of a continental divide, which was its problem in terms of finding a water supply. Now that I told you about the Ohio Waterworks Company, the Akron Waterworks Company, and right in the city of Akron at about this location was something called Summit Lake. And Summit Lake fed the canal. That was also where Akron got its water. It had a very unfortunate couple of incidents that occurred. One was there was a terrible fire that took place in the city of Akron in 1910. It devastated downtown, and the Akron Waterworks Company just didn't have enough water to fight that fire. Second thing that happened was that the Ohio Board of Health in 1909 condemned the water supply, said it's unhealthful. It was the same water that was being used for the canal at that time, and they said, you need to find another source, and that's what set this whole saga off and running. Now, in 1911, with those two events behind them, you can see that there were a whole series of developments. The big complication was, and it's important to understand this in terms of understanding what the statute was doing, Governor Harmon had run for re-election on a platform of rebuilding and enlarging Ohio's canals. If you look back here in the courtroom, you'll see right above the center panel there that says 1832. That 1832 was actually the completion of this Ohio Canal, so that it ran all the way from the Ohio River to Lake Erie. By this point, the canal had really deteriorated and the traffic was quite diminished. Governor Harmon's platform was bigger, better canals will fight the railroads, and you all remember the antitrust laws that came about in that progressive era. So Akron knew that politically it had to satisfy the governor if it was going to get rights to the water that it needed, and it couldn't jeopardize his ability to build a fancy new canal, which he never built, actually. But that was his announcement. The city hired engineers, they went looking for water, and they found three physical possibilities. Physical meaning a quantity of water that was capable of being dammed up and that was located in a place where it was sufficiently clean and unpolluted that they wouldn't just replicate the problem that they already had with Summit Lake. And this map showed the legislators where those three places were. The one right up here, the Rockwell Dam site, it's very difficult for you to see this, but if you dig it out in one of the exhibits in the supplement, you will see that what that says on the map is possible point of diversion. That is, in fact, where the Rockwell Dam was built. That is the only possible point of diversion that was ever identified on the Cuyahoga River. Secondly, on the Tuscarawas River, there was a possible point of diversion here south of Akron, also outside the city, the only point of diversion identified on that river. Thirdly, there was a possible point of diversion identified on the Little Cuyahoga River, the only point of diversion for that river. The difficulty was that at that time, they had a pleasant habit that we might well be served if it was still the habit, and that is that the General Assembly only met several months of the year. The General Assembly was going to adjourn in June for the balance of the year, and the engineers were still furiously working on which of these three points is the preferred point. They knew they had to get the legislation passed before the engineers would complete their physical studies, and so they needed authorization for all three possibilities so they could use whichever one ultimately was the preferred
Council,
choice.
We could learn a lot from all that you're prepared to tell us in terms of history, but the clock's going to run out on in terms
of
questions. And you have a very informative brief filed in this case as well. And your position is, with respect to the Cuyahoga River, in 1911, the grant gave us it all. We own it all. There's no limitation on what we can do. Is that?
You've been reading the characterization of our position by the plaintiffs of the case, Your Honor. Our position in the case is that what we were given in that legislation was the right to choose which location we preferred, to divert the entire river from one of those locations upstream from that location, but not that we owned the river.
No.
The river would continue flowing below that place. It would be fed by other tributaries, and that downstream riparians would no longer have rights to demand water from above the diversion point. Okay. They would make do with the water that entered the river below that diversion
point. So if you prevail, the case is easy to, if we agree with you, the case is easy to write and we're done.
If
however, we don't agree that the grant was to the use of it all, and that there is subject to a reasonable use limitation, procedurally, where are we? Did the trial court determine what is a reasonable use for the city of Akron, or would we need to send the case back for a determination?
No, Your Honor, what happened in this case was the case went off incorrectly, prematurely, in that the trial court on summary judgment construed wholly wrongly the statute and found that the statute did not apply to any of the Cuyahoga River above the city of Akron. Now, how that could be is hard to understand since where on the river did we get if we didn't get it above the city of Akron? And I urge you to take a look at Justice Brandeis' decision in the Sears case in the U.S. Supreme Court, which was a dispute between a power company that had a charter purely for developing the river from the Little Cuyahoga confluence upstream.
Okay, well,
but I'm getting to your point. I apologize. But what it went off wrongly on that point. It went off wrongly on the appropriation that Akron effected in 1912. Found that that did not apply to water, that it applied to land. The Court of Appeals said that was just a fundamental mistake. It went off wrongly. Then what happened was, procedurally, we were forced to try a case on wholly improper principles, namely unreasonable use. Fortunately, we prevailed in the trial court on that unreasonable use theory, which is the wrong theory of the case, and it was affirmed in the Court of Appeals. So the point that we're here for today is to make certain that we are not faced in the future with repetitive unreasonable use lawsuits and res judicata or collateral estoppel on the meaning of the appropriation and the statute, because we never should have to go through another trial like the one we did, even though we were successful.
May I just ask you in that light? The original grant, if I understand the act, is for the purpose of supplying water to the city of Akron and the inhabitants thereof. And part of the complaint, I think, by Portage is that Akron has now developed facilities for sale of this water at three other locations, which doesn't seem to be part of that original act.
Okay, Justice O'Donnell, I think we need to understand, first of all, as the legislature has reminded us, when we're looking at ambiguous statutes, that we look at the purpose as one of the ways that we construe the statute. We also turn to the contemporaneous circumstances in the legislative history. There is absolutely nothing in the legislative history or in any other contemporaneous explanation that contemplated that when Akron would switch its water supply from Summit Lake, which was then serving non-residents, and it would move up to Lake Rockwell, that statutory grant and that appropriation were not intended to allow it to continue serving its non-resident customers who had no other water source. In fact, we suggest that when you look at that language,
how do you explain away the phrase "and for no other purpose"? For the purpose of supplying water to said city of Akron and its inhabitants thereof, and for no other purpose.
Thank you, Justice Stratton. You have been tricked. You've been tricked into looking at the wrong document. That is found in the so-called governor's deed, which was supposed to implement the statute. It is not found in the statute. The statute itself purported to make the grant.
Well, then wouldn't the deed control, too?
Because I think that we've given you some citations to law that where there is an inartful or incorrect implementation of the statute, it is the statute that controls, not the subsequent so-called deed. The statute effected a grant.
Have you sought reformation of the deed?
I don't believe that until 1998 anyone had ever suggested that this was an inhibition, and therefore no one ever realized that anybody would make this error.
I think you were answering Justice O'Donnell's question. Were you finished with answering his question? Because I have a question.
No, the answer to the question, and I would like to save the last 2 minutes if I could, Your Honor. The answer to Justice O'Donnell's question is that when it says the city and its inhabitants, you first have to say when there is a grant to the city, what did it mean? Legislation at the time already provided that the city had authority to sell water to non-residents. Secondly, there was legislation that for non-residents located along water lines, the city was obligated to serve non-residents. Thirdly, within months, the Home Rule Amendment in the 1912 Constitution actually gave the city to sell an unlimited supply of water to non-residents. Even if you were going to construe it that way, we would suggest that the Home Rule Amendments overrode it.
I have a question that goes to the Act, the statute, 1911 Act. Is some of the water claimed by, the sources of water claimed by Akron, water that did not flow into the canal in 1911?
Yes, all of it.
How do you get around the words of the Act?
The fact is, Your Honor, the way this worked is that the water came out at Lake Rockwell up here. It went through the system. It went back in at the wastewater plant. And the only connection between the canal and the Cuyahoga River was farther upstream. The water is flowing up at this point toward Cleveland at the what's known as Peninsula, a small town. So that all of the water that Akron used came out of the river, then went back into the river, and was all available for the canal. That was what satisfied Governor Harmon that Akron was not, in fact, going to interfere with his ability to make a bigger canal and continue to use the reuse Akron's water in his canal.
But I read your briefing this point, but I want to hear you explain why aren't the words of the Act why don't they limit Akron to only that water that was supplying the canal in 1911?
That's because there would have been no water from the Cuyahoga River at all. They knew that this was going to be the point of diversion. There was no water supplying the canal from this point of diversion. But more importantly, the same statute, which you have to read in context, specifically prohibited Akron from reducing the flow into the canal or from prohibiting water to be available for any enlarged canal. So by definition, what was being given to Akron was not canal water. It was Akron could use water so long as it was not canal water.
Let me give you a chance to answer this question. I take this from your brief. I get the impression that Akron here, for important economic reasons, wants to gather as much of the land here that has water flowing through it as it possibly can so that it can sell it to others, which apparently is a fairly lucrative business for Akron. Am I wrong?
I think that you would be correct in part. It's not gathering land. That's not the key.
It was
gathering water.
Right.
Akron operates a highly efficient water system. Plaintiffs will dispute that, but they do. The point is that the more customers that you can run through the same fixed cost, the same water plant, the lower is the cost to every customer. And therefore, it is beneficial to residents and non-residents alike to operate one big regional water plant instead of having 10 or 15 scattered all over the place. Akron makes no apology for the fact that it thinks it is providing a highly valuable and efficient public service.
Council, back to the historical part of this, and I think I got this also in your brief. The original plan, when it was presented to the legislature, the Rockwell Dam and the Cuyahoga River, that was sort of the backstop, wasn't it? The original thought was we're going to use these other two sources because they're closer.
The original thought was that the preferred source would be the Tuscarawas.
Because it's close.
It had plenty of the rural Cuyahoga was always problematic, didn't have much water. The Tuscarawas had plenty of water, and it was closer. The problem was that, as things happen, you may recall Justice Pfeiffer and the General Assembly, there was some log rolling that went on. And Barberton, which is located over here, southwest of Akron, Barberton did not want to have any of the watershed diverted that could be used by it. So it got amendments inserted into the statute. Those are important amendments because they put a limit on the quantity for the Tuscarawas, which did not get inserted for the Cuyahoga. They put a prohibition on taking flow for a period of about 5 months out of the year, which made it completely impractical. And so the quantity limit and the months of the year limit effectively said, fine, Akron, if you needed a supplemental reservoir, you could put it on the Tuscarawas, but it's not going to be able to be your primary reservoir because Barberton has gotten away with it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Jacobs.
You.
Mr. McLandridge.
May it please the court, my name's John McLandrich, here this morning on behalf of the City of Ravenna. I'll be fairly brief, hope to use about 5 minutes, leave the rest for Mr. Van Clay, who's got the plaintiffs and much bigger issues. Ravenna was brought in as a third-party defendant in this litigation by the City of Akron. They were brought in because they have a waterworks of their own, which utilizes Lake Hodson, which is off of the Breakneck Creek. And it's undisputed in this litigation that the state of Ohio never utilized any of Breakneck Creek watershed, Breakneck Creek itself, for operation of the canal. The City of Akron brought Ravenna in because they believe that Ravenna is using water that was within the grant that was given to the City of Akron. The facts in this case demonstrate that Ravenna has operated a waterworks since before the turn of the century, late 1800s, but has been utilizing the Breakneck Creek since, in Akron's own admissions, 1916. In 1934, there was a resolution that was proffered between the two cities to talk about a division of the water that's in the Breakneck Creek watershed. That resolution was never adopted. In 1957, and prior to that, Ravenna wrote to the City of Akron, made inquiry with respect to Akron's interest in the Breakneck Creek watershed. Wendell Ledoux, for whom Ledoux Reservoir is named, indicated that Akron didn't have any interest any longer in the Breakneck Creek, the Congress Lake outlet watershed. Ravenna at that time purchased assets that had been previously owned by the Worsted Mills, which operated a wool finishing plant off of the Breakneck Creek, utilized a section of the P&O feeder canal, which was the Pennsylvania-Ohio Canal, not the Ohio Canal, to which Mr. Jacobs has been referring, to divert water from the Breakneck Creek watershed to augment the natural occurring supply of water in Lake Hodson. Ravenna bought those assets and moved its water plant from what was Crystal Lake to Lake Hodson, and since then has continued to operate its waterworks from Lake Hodson. Now,
if the plaintiff prevails against you, what is the practical effect of that decision?
Well, we're third-party defendant, so if you're speaking with respect to Akron as third-party plaintiff, the practical effect would be, well, frankly, the practical effect may be nothing in the sense that they've admitted in their brief that while they believe the technical effect would be that they have an ongoing right in perpetuity to condemn our waterworks, reduce to possession the Breakneck Creek, Congress Lake outlet, what have you, that now they're financially unable, it's impractical to be able to condemn those waterworks, because of course they'd have to compensate us for the value of our water system, the value of all the water rights that they'd be eminent domaining from us. Their allegation is that what they received from the state of Ohio is a right in perpetuity to condemn any water source that is a tributary to any of those three rivers or those three rivers themselves. Our position is, and of course Akron asserts these propositions, that latches prohibit someone from asserting these rights after 21 years. Well, with respect to Ravenna, Akron waited from 1911, 1916, 1934, 1957, pick whichever point in time you want, until they were sued in this case by the plaintiffs to assert that Ravenna was acting in derogation of their rights relative to the Breakneck Creek watershed and Lake Hodson. Now, of course, Lake Hodson is not a tributary to the Cuyahoga River, and obviously there's a little spillage out of it, but it's not a tributary, and as such, frankly, is not affected at all by this grant, and so Lake Hodson really has nothing to do with this litigation, but the Breakneck Creek itself certainly is. Now, in trying to make effect of the grant, they passed an appropriation ordinance, like 1912 is the date. What they eminent domained was everything upstream of the point of diversion, as he refers to it, the site of the Lake Rockwell Dam. Well, Breakneck Creek enters below Lake Rockwell, was never appropriated, and they don't contend that it was appropriated. What they contend is that they continue to have this inchoate right to appropriate it should they wish to do so. Our position is that, assuming arguendo they had such a right, which we don't believe that they did, that that right was lost through their inaction over the last almost century, and frankly also lost by virtue of the fact that Ravenna, like Akron, has made an investment in its waterworks, has customers that rely on it, and these are cases that they cite. They rely on Blue Ash for the proposition that once a public entity has reduced a resource to public use that another public entity can't come in and now say, well, we have a better use for it, so we're going to eminent domain it away from you. That's certainly a proposition that we commend to the court and would prohibit their future efforts, should they ever want to try and make any, to eminent domain Ravenna's use of the Breakneck Creek, the P&O Feeder Canal, and Lake Hudson. So from Ravenna's position, it's a fairly simple case. You know, Akron, again, likes to talk about latches and Ravenna's delay in bringing this litigation. Of course, there was no reason for Ravenna to bring litigation. Ravenna was brought into this litigation. Ravenna had no, wasn't being adversely impacted by any conduct of Akron because, of course, Akron's waterworks sits on the main stem of the Cuyahoga. We're off on this tributary, the Breakneck Creek. So, you know, there was never any issue with respect to Ravenna, so there isn't any sitting on our rights or delay, but certainly Akron has been fully aware of Ravenna's conduct over this roughly century and has sat on its rights, so and they're the ones that assert latches applies in this case, and if it has any application, certainly Ravenna believes that it works to cut off any inchoate right of Akron or future desire to be able to eminent domain Breakneck Creek and Ravenna's waterworks. And sort of lastly, while plaintiff talks about this inchoate right and this transfer by the state of its power to appropriate, and you know, I would simply note, with all due deference to Mr. Jacobs and the intent of the legislatures and what have you, the starting point for legislative construction is the language of the grant. Now, the language of the grant says, now wholly or partly owned or controlled by the state and used for supplying the northern division of the Ohio Canal. This is language that they just sort of choose to ignore because, of course, it's not helpful. They now just characterize it as descriptive of the area for which they were allowed to eminent domain.
I think your argument, I think, is that the General Assembly in 1911 wanted to be certain that the canal had an adequate supply of water, and that the act was designed to protect the water supply of the canal and nothing more.
Well, that's...
Is that correct, or is that misreading of your position?
Well, our position is that the state could only convey what it had, and certainly had no rights in any of the tributaries, had rights in the navigable rivers. It had reduced some of it to possession, eminent domain, some of it for the canal purposes. Mr. Jacobs, I think, incorrectly says, well, we were required to protect the canal water, so obviously we couldn't be taking the same water, we couldn't be getting granted the same water which we were given to protect. But of course, as he's just demonstrated, they're able to take all the water and return it before it ever gets to the canal. So this idea that they were only given the canal water and yet they couldn't be given the canal water because they had to preserve that is a giant red herring, because they've taken all the water of the Cuyahoga and yet returned it, although some of it's now going over the watershed and not returning, and that's a whole other issue for Mr. Van Clay, but it's all returned before the state of Ohio takes any water from the canal. So it was certainly quite feasible for the state to have granted what it in fact had, which was the canal water it had eminent domained, and allowed Akron to use it and return it before it got to the canal. And you know, our position is the state could only give what it had, but more importantly, our position is that none of what occurred had anything to do with the Breakneck Creek, and more importantly, that even if it did, over these roughly 100 years since then, Akron's failure to do anything with respect to the Breakneck Creek in the face of Ravenna's open, obvious, notorious use of the Breakneck Creek and its watershed cuts off any rights, and as I say, Lake Hudson is not a tributary and is certainly not affected by this grant in any fashion whatsoever. And so we would certainly ask the court to affirm as to Ravenna and its rights in the Breakneck Creek watershed, Lake Hudson, and the P&O Feeder Canal. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. McLanders. Mr. Van Clay.
Thank you, Your Honor. We would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal on our cross assignments of error. May it please the court, my name is Jack Van Clay. I represent the Portage County Commissioners, the City of Kent, Cuyahoga Falls, Monroe Falls, and Silver Lake. Your Honors, this case rises and falls on three very basic issues of property law. The first issue and the first principle of property law is that the state of Ohio never owned any riparian rights in the Middle Cuyahoga River, where the plaintiffs are located, and thus could not convey any of those property rights to Akron in the 1911 statute. The second principle is that Akron although it purchased some limited riparian rights in the Middle Cuyahoga River, did not purchase most of the riparian rights owned by the plaintiffs in the Middle Cuyahoga River, and thus does not own those riparian rights. And then the third principle of basic property law is that under a century of riparian law in Ohio, Akron is responsible for reasonably sharing the water in the Middle Cuyahoga River with its co-owners. Now, Akron wishes to convince this court that it owns all of the water in the river.
Counsel, I come back to my question I had, Mr. Jacobs. I understand Akron's position, and you just said it, that they their grant in 1911 gave it to them the right to claim it all. If we don't agree with that, what is it that the plaintiffs are asking for in total, and maybe you can just sum up the cross complaint as well, and procedurally, where are we? In other words, can we decide it all here and it's over, or does it need to go back? And I'll expand on that a little. I am surprised, because I think it would be helpful if the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and the Ohio EPA had weighed in on this case at some point in time, because I think they're stakeholders and have an interest in this. They're not in the case. But so my question is, procedurally, if what is it that you want, and where would that happen at this point? Could it all happen here, or does it need to go back for resolution of reasonable use issues?
Your Honor, it could all happen here. Since Akron has to reasonably share the water with the plaintiffs in the Middle Cuyahoga River, and because the trial court determined that 5 million gallons per day was the amount that Akron had to reasonably share, although unfortunately the trial court did not issue any declaratory judgment or injunctive relief to that effect, it simply made that finding. This court could remand the case back to the trial court with instructions to issue declaratory relief and or an injunction for the 5 million gallons per day. Now, we had also asked in our cross assignments of error that this court determine that based on the undisputed evidence in the case that in reality we were entitled to 10.9 million gallons per day, because that is the amount that is necessary to preserve the extreme drought flow in the river. And there was uncontroverted evidence in the trial court that this was necessary to protect the habitat of the river.
Is there evidence that that's technically feasible, that level of stream augmentation can be sustained and Akron can still service not only the city of Akron, but all of the customers that they have acquired, Summit County and other people that they are servicing? Can they maintain a water supply, a sustained water supply in perpetuity, and to that level of stream augmentation?
Yes, Your Honor, easily. In fact, Akron boasts to its prospective customers who it's still trying to market that it has a safe yield of 86 million gallons per day. Right now, it uses 42 million gallons per day. That's with all of its commitments. So that leaves over 44 million gallons per day. We are asking for only one-fourth of that, 10.9 million gallons per day, leaving Akron with three-quarters of its existing surplus to market to additional customers. So the bottom line in this case is that the court could grant every single request that we have in this case.
And you're not trying to take Akron back to a grant that says you can service just, you know, you're entitled to water for the city of Akron?
No, Your Honor. No.
And so in fact, you're not trying to unring the bell in terms of what they're doing in terms of servicing other customers?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. They have plenty of water to service not only all of their existing non-resident customers, but many more in the future if they choose to do that. But Akron wants to take it all. They are, in fact.
Did the Department of Natural Resources weigh in, or was their technical expertise sought in terms of the level of stream augmentation that is necessary to maintain a healthy river? And evaporation issues that are associated with impounding water in a large reservoir?
No, Your Honor, the Department of Natural Resources chose not to participate in this case. But Ohio EPA, although it chose not to participate as a party, did make a determination, which is in the record, and there's testimony from Ohio EPA employees in the record, that a stream flow of 8.5 million gallons per day was necessary as a constant flow in the river to preserve the amount of oxygen that the fish needed to survive. That is an amount in addition to the seepage under the dam that Akron refers to in its brief, in which unfortunately the court subtracted out of the total amount of water it said we were entitled to when it issued its decision.
Did this case, I thought this, maybe I'm wrong, this case started because EPA found that facilities in Portage County were, the effluent coming from treatment facilities in Portage County was not being dispersed in the river as it should be because of the low levels of water. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is partially correct. What happened here was, in addition to many other harms that the plaintiffs are incurring to their parks, for example, from low flow, the plaintiffs have several wastewater treatment plants that depend on a healthy flow in that river in order to keep the permit limits down to a reasonable stringency. And Ohio EPA, in doing a study on the river, found out that because of the restriction by Akron of those flows, including cutting off the flow on occasion completely, that this was harming the fish. The fish essentially have been destroyed in that part of the river for the most part, with a few exceptions of some large pike that are found once in a while. But they found that in order to adequately preserve the river, they would have to tighten the plaintiff's wastewater treatment limits even further than the state-of-the-art limits they already had before then. And because Ohio EPA had no jurisdiction over stream quantity issues, the only way they could accomplish that purpose was to tighten our permit limits even further beyond the state of art that had already existed at those plants.
EPA cannot order Akron to release more water from the reservoir.
No, they cannot, Your Honor. And in fact, there is testimony from the EPA in this case that because it couldn't order Akron to release more water, it would just take what Akron gave it, and that's all it could do, essentially. I would mention also that although Akron in this court is attempting to put its best face on its case and argue that it really isn't trying to cut off everybody else's water supply, in reality, it filed a counterclaim in the trial court asking the court to determine that everybody else in the participating in this case, including Ravenna that it dragged into the case, had no rights to use the river because under the 1911 statute, Akron had all those rights, and at any point, Akron could take whatever rights it wanted to. In fact, Portage County's largest water plant is located upstream from Lake Rockwell, and Akron, as part of the relief in this case, is asking the court to determine that Portage County is converting its water that it owns, which essentially will shut that plant down. Not only that, but Akron takes the position that not only does it own all the river, all the water in the Cuyahoga River, it owns all the water in the tributaries.
On that narrow point, if I read Mr. Jacobs' brief correctly, with respect to that upstream plant, he says that's a system of wells, is it not?
Yes.
But he's saying, in essence, even though you're taking groundwater, you're sucking groundwater up that would eventually find its way into the Cuyahoga River, and is that correct?
Yeah, that is exactly their argument.
So their claim is not just what's in the Cuyahoga River, but also groundwaters that eventually may end up there, may not.
Yes, they are claiming that, Your Honor. They're claiming that if the groundwater is all in any way connected to the Cuyahoga River or any of its tributaries, it owns all the groundwater too. So anybody, including my clients, as well as anybody else living in the area, theoretically has to take second place to Akron. And I would add, Your Honor, that the way Akron reads the statute, the 1911 statute, which says that the state gives all water in the Cuyahoga River and its tributaries now used or controlled by the state of Ohio for purposes of the canal. If you accept Akron's interpretation of that statute and read out the words related to the canal as a limitation, then all of the water in the Cuyahoga and its tributaries, starting in Geauga County and moving all the way to Cleveland, is Akron's.
What is the rule of law that you want, or what relief do you want us to write in this case, if we agree with your viewpoint?
Your Honor, the rule of law would be, first of all, under the 1911 statute, the state of Ohio granted Akron only the surplus canal water from that was being used at the time by the state. What actually happened here was the state wanted to reserve the right to use the water for navigation purposes in the canal.
I read the legislation. I understand they want the canal to be operative. Yeah. I understand.
So the first thing, Your Honor, that we would want is declaratory relief, this court to affirm the lower court's determination that under the 1911 statute, Akron does not own the water in the Middle Cuyahoga River to which we have riparian rights. That's the first thing. The second thing would be to affirm the Court of Appeals in determining that we are entitled to declaratory judgment as to our reasonable use and how much that is.
The 5 million gallons as
yeah. And then the third thing would be to overrule the lower court under the manifest weight of the evidence law, because it ignored all of the evidence that would have dictated a reasonable use share for us of either 10.9 million gallons or 8.5 million gallons.
Thank you.
Mr. Van Clay, it's not appropriate for us to order anything in this case on this question, but this case cries out for regional planning of water supply use. Has there been any attempt by any of the parties here to get together and decide what's in the best interest of everyone so that you don't have this very expensive process of deciding who gets the water? Who gets to control the water? Has there been any attempt to do that?
Well, Your Honor, before the case was filed, we made some attempts to work out some deals with Akron, but their position is they own it all and they don't need to negotiate with us.
Thank you, Mr. Van Clay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jacobs, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
See if I can answer some of the questions that were being asked. Justice Stratton, you asked a question. And I think it's important for you to understand that the bill specifically refers to tributaries. As the plaintiffs would have it construed, it would be meaningless. That entire language would go out because there is no tributary that was used to feed the canal. So the question is, if it's just what was feeding the canal, where do the tributaries fit into the scheme? Justice Pfeiffer, you asked a few questions. You asked about the flow and what they would want you to order. The fact is that the drought low flow was in dispute in this case, that the trial court made a finding of fact, and the Court of Appeals affirmed that Akron's release policy is reasonable and does satisfy the conditions that are required in the river. They are asking you to overrule a finding of fact that was affirmed by the Court of Appeals. The Ohio EPA director, actually, there is a letter in evidence that says that 3.5 MGD from Akron's reservoir was satisfactory. Chief Justice Moyer, you asked a question, and the issue was, do the plaintiffs What is it about their wastewater treatment plants? The issue here is, should these plaintiffs, having been warned in 1913 that they were going to face no flow, should they be treating the water satisfactorily for the flow that they have experienced for the last 95 years? Or, and should they lower their dams that are purely decorative, otherwise non-functional, as the Ohio EPA has ordered them to do? Or should they not have to treat it to a higher standard and have Akron flush it? That's the question. Justice O'Donnell, you asked a question about the surplus canal water. The fact is, the surplus canal water was in fact the condemned water supply. If that was what the statute was accomplishing, it was wholly useless. The trial court's problem here was not a surplus water supply, canal water supply, but rather that the trial court said that this statute only applied from the point just north of the city of Cleveland downstream, and it found that the statute didn't give Akron anything upstream, which was the only thing that the legislature was being asked to do. You have to back up and say what was happening in 1911 with all due respect. What is happening today is not what is before the court. It's what was the appropriation and what was the statute then.
Counsel, in your brief, and there was some discussion about these water wells upstream from the
Yes.
the dam. Is it your claim that the grant gives Akron not only ownership or control of all of the surface waters in the watershed of the Cuyahoga, but also the underground water as well?
No. It is our claim that the underground water is separately the subject of the appropriation, goes beyond the grant. 1911 statute doesn't have anything to do with the underground water.
So,
but the appropriation and
how much of the underground water do you own?
Let me first apologize that I realized the copy that is in the supplement was not a complete copy of the appropriation. It was a joint exhibit, and it was, in copying somehow, it was omitted. But if you go back in the record and you find the actual appropriation, three things were appropriated. The flow of water in the river above the dam. Second, the flow of water in the tributaries to the river above the dam. And thirdly, and expressly as an additional appropriation, all water which would flow into the river. Well, other than the tributaries, that third category only refers to the aquifer that discharges into the river. And quite frankly, a river would be almost useless if everyone along it could mine the water, suck it out of the river, and you wouldn't have anything left in the river. And that's why the appropriation went to that water. Our problem is not Portage County using the water from the Shalersville wellfield. Everybody upstream uses the water. Farmers, they return it above the dam, so it still goes back into the aquifer, and it doesn't affect the quantity we get. The difference is that Portage County at Shalersville takes the water out, sucks it out of the river. They then send it to Aurora, which is across another watershed divide. They return it up near Cleveland, and as a result, they have taken appropriated water. Subsequently, with the appropriation in place and knowing it, they are taking that water, and they are taking it completely around Akron's water supply.
Counsel, it's based on the representations of the appellee here. Akron has more than enough water to meet its commitments and then some to the citizens of Akron, to its customers, to the JEDs, et cetera. Do you agree with that statement?
No. That is a highly contested statement in the record. There have got to be 10 different witnesses that testified as to that issue. What you heard was plaintiff's contention and plaintiff's selective use of a few exhibits. There's plenty of testimony about what is truly safe yield, and our experts come in and they explain that in a reservoir, the bottom part of the water column in the reservoir is essentially only usable in extreme circumstances because it is very difficult to treat. It's low oxygen water. That's where the sediment has settled. That is a highly disputed issue of fact. And the trial court's finding on the reasonable use issue, that Akron's use has in fact been reasonable, disposes of that. They're asking you to go back and retry the case. Let me just suggest, Your Honor, that what you should be doing in this case is adopting Akron's propositions 1, 2, 4, and 6, rejecting plaintiff's propositions 5 and 6, and everything else becomes moot and is unnecessary for the court to reach.
Thank you. Mr. Van Clay, you've used your time, but you may start with 30 seconds.
Your Honor, you just heard several arguments made by my colleague that are being heard for the first time in this case. For example, with regard to the safe yield of 86 million gallons per day, they admitted that in the trial court, and in fact, in closing argument in the trial court, counsel specifically said that he would not be contesting the safe yield in that court.
And what volume of water are they pumping into the reservoir on a daily basis?
Your Honor, it varies depending on the season and the day. There's really no measurement of how much they pump in, but they can pretty much just block off the entire river with a dam and impound the whole thing whenever they choose, and that's what they do. The amount of water that's measured is actually 42 million gallons per day coming out of the river and coming out of the reservoir. I would add that Akron would choose to have the 2.5 million gallons per day being used by Portage County at Shalersville, have that go back into the river while it continues to take 42 million gallons per day out for its own use, taking all of the water and telling the folks who don't use nearly as much that they need to keep all of their water in the river. I would add that with regard to the tributaries of the Cuyahoga River, one of our cross assignments of error concerns the city of Kent and the fact that in the Court of Appeals, the city of Kent essentially lost all of its riparian rights because the Court of Appeals determined, contrary to the factual findings of the trial court, that Kent no longer owned any rights to the Cuyahoga River. But Kent has a water plant on the Breakneck Creek, which is a tributary of the Cuyahoga River. And its rights are jeopardized if you rule in Akron's favor on the 1911 statute. But the reason that the tributary issue was addressed by the 1911 statute is because the state owned some canal rights downstream from all of these tributaries and the main stem of the Cuyahoga River. And under the law of reasonable use, it had the right at its own property downstream to receive a reasonable flow from all those tributaries and the main stem as it went down. Now, the state at the time was using surplus canal water to sell to industry. It no longer needed most of this water for navigation. So while it proceeded to reserve whatever water in the future it would need for navigation, it decided to turn over the water that it had been using for sales of surplus canal water to the industries, to Akron instead. And that's how the whole statute fits together and makes sense. Now, Akron would have you believe that the statute turned over all of these riparian rights that were owned by private parties on the tributaries and the main stem, and as a result, it owns all of those rights.
You need to sum up, Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, in summary, we would ask that the court rule that the 1911 statute does not provide Akron with any riparian rights on the Middle Cuyahoga River, that it must share the water in the Middle Cuyahoga River reasonably under a century of reasonable use law in Ohio with the rightful co-owners in that Middle Cuyahoga River, And we would ask that you first of all affirm the Court of Appeals in its order to the trial court to issue a declaratory judgment for a reasonable use of water and the amount of that reasonable use of water, and further to overturn the lower courts in their ignoring undisputed factual information in the record that would show that we have at least a right to the 8.5 million gallons per day that Ohio EPA determined was necessary for that river. Contrary to what counsel said about the letter about 3.5, Ohio EPA said that 3.5 was okay at that point only because they had no right to order Akron to release any water.
Counsel, yep. Before you sit down.
Yes, sir.
The plaintiff's position with respect to Akron's right to reasonable use includes not only the water necessary to supply all the citizens of the city of Akron, but it would include reasonable use from the plaintiff's view. Reasonable use by Akron would include all of their other water customers, the rest of Summit County, and whatever other communities they service at the present time. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the position that we take is that we are entitled to an extreme drought flow, 10.9.
Right.
That's the ultimate order that we would like. If that order is issued, then Akron does have the ability to serve all of its existing customers, both residents and Nazareth residents, and it has approximately 33 million gallons left to market to additional customers in the future. And that is undisputed in the record.
Thank you, Mr. Van Clay. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.